I'd like to start by thanking Jen in several ways. I'd like to thank Jen for bringing us all here and for the conversation which she's allowed us all to have. For me, it is such an incredible pleasure to be in a group of people where feminism is almost taken for granted. And not only feminism, but a type of feminism which is community-based, looking at the realities of women's lives, very specific in time and space and grounded, and also looking at the global situations and that combination of local and global, that combination of activism and thinking, scholarship, academia, is so important and far too rare among feminist gatherings. And so I'd like to thank Jen for that. And I guess I'd also like to thank Jen for the way that she has brought ideas and activism together in such an articulated and integrated way, another very rare gift. And for me, there are two features of Jen's work which I found particularly valuable. For many years, I've been struggling with trying to understand alternative notions of wealth. And one of the features, and so I understood a number of features about the money system and, you know, the insatiable greed and all of those sorts of things that this money system creates. But the feature that I hadn't understood until I met Jen was the exchange basis for that economy, and how important it and how much of a shift it is to all of a sudden recognize that difference. What I'd like to do very briefly is to talk a little bit about what I've called women's community work, which we all know about, and which is another sort of way of looking at some of the gift economy features, I think. I've been sort of thinking about women's community work for many years, partly as a way of trying to locate myself in a space where I could see women and imagine what might be possible for women to do and create and conceive, and also to try to get rid of the incredible patriarchal assumptions which haunted me as a sociologist, as a feminist sociologist, even someone who recognized that paradigm was oppressive. And yet I kept finding myself trapped in scholarly paradigms which didn't allow us to see the world, which ended up creating knowledge which we took into a community which would be elitist and oppressive to the community. And working in Nova Scotia communities and in Atlantic Canada, where I live for a number of years, with women in communities, I began to understand the ways in which that knowledge needed to change in order for us to begin to even look at each other and think with each other together. So women's community work, at one point I called it a third part of the puzzle. We had production, we had reproduction, and then we had this characteristic of community, which a number of women understood. They understood it in Labrador. They understood it in fishing communities. Women that had surrounded me initially in the metropolitan areas of Halifax and New York when I was at graduate school, Columbia, were colonized. We didn't recognize that we were women. And it took me a long time to recognize that I was a woman, that there was nothing that I could do, or at least conceive of doing at the time, that would get me away from being a woman and treated as a woman in this society. And that if I was going to be treated as a woman in this society, I was going to be part of the solution. And I was going to try to create with other women alternatives for myself and sort of a new world. One of the things that I began to recognize was that the concepts of the everyday concepts we use, security these days, things like wealth, were so fundamentally riddled with assumptions that made no sense for women, and which didn't center people either, which didn't look at women's potential or anyone's potential, which were dead concepts. They were based on exploitation. They were based on slavery. There was an economist named Goldsmith that I read at one point that said, natural resources are excluded from calculations of national wealth insofar as they cannot be separately appropriated or sold, as is the case with sunshine and precipitation. He also said, human resources are omitted because human beings are not considered part of the national wealth unless they can be appropriated. Where slavery exists, the market values of slaves, which in part reflects their training, constitutes a separate category of national wealth. It is perhaps symptomatic of patriarchy that the concept of standard of living is based on an assumption which only includes human potential when it is enslaved. And so the concepts of wealth don't include human potential. They don't include relationships. They don't include networks. They include one person expropriating the labor and exploiting the labor of another. And when women in Labrador taught me to see women's community work, they taught me to see that women were, in fact, creating the community. If it weren't for the community, there would be no... If it weren't for the women, there would be no community, they told me. And they told me this after I had a PhD. Somehow, my PhD education as a sociologist at Columbia University, which said it was the greatest university anywhere for sociologists, hadn't taught me to see the world, had not taught me to recognize women, to value women, to value myself. And so I began to see women in communities, and I began to see women in the women's movement. And I think there's if you just think of the millions of gifts that the women's movement have given to each other and to ourselves, and continues to do that daily, that's a really good place. I heard some people at lunch saying they didn't know, they wanted some more information about the gift giving and where was it. Well, look at the women's movement and let's recreate a women's movement where those gifts are forthcoming in all directions. I've also, part of understanding, my understanding as a feminist is also understanding patriarchy. And what I see and have seen around me in the last 10 years when I've been working with a group of women in fishing communities in Nova Scotia called Nova Scotia Women's Fishnet. And we've been watching the appropriation of the commons. We've been watching the government regulations which have told people that they can no longer fish. We've been watching all of these things and beginning to understand what was happening was as a form of economic fundamentalism. This should have prepared me for a Supreme Court decision which occurred 2 weeks ago in Canada. The Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, said that Newfoundland, which is a poor province, was excused from living up to its commitments to equality and to women's equal pay for work of equal value, which the health workers had negotiated with the Newfoundland government in 1991. So courts take a while to make decisions, as you can see. And basically what they said is, although that women's equality rights don't matter because Newfoundland was in such debt, and in extraordinary circumstances like this, the debt can, is a bigger value. Getting rid of the debt, not making Newfoundland more in debt, is a higher value than women's equality. And I say that that particular decision, although it is economic fundamentalism. That's what it, it's an example of, a perfect example of that. But I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it in a country which had signed CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, where governments are required to take appropriate action to reduce inequalities toward women. And yet in this country that has done that, it nevertheless, the Supreme Court ended up making a decision like that. The reason I mention that and my concerns, real concerns with what's going on, is because I've seen the social fabric of Newfoundland and Labrador and Nova Scotia communities being ripped apart by the neoliberal corporatist agenda. And I'm concerned. When I was writing this paper, I came up against a question which I want to pose because I don't know the answer, and I'm looking for some guidance, perhaps especially from Jen. I can understand the incredible importance that the gift has made to me in understanding, the incredible importance it seems to have made to people in this room, because I've heard them talk about it. And yet I'm wondering about the public identification of the gift at this present time of such harsh economic fundamentalism, which I see around me. What I've been noticing in the last 3 or 4 months is a whole bunch of examples of where the gift and the ability of communities to do gift giving have been undermined by government policies in Canada. And I would like to therefore pose a question which would help me, I think, in my way forward. I'm wondering, is it better to remain invisible in these times of rampant neoliberalism and neopatriarchy and economic fundamentalism? If we name gifts, will individuals in societies become even more vulnerable? I want to talk about the gift, but if I'm talking about the gift in, for other communities, if I'm identifying the ways in which communities are giving gifts to each other, similar to, we heard some examples with the remittances this morning, where Margaret's also on the military propaganda. Strategically, I guess this is a question that I have and that's been really troubling me. How do we protect against this system, this horrible system which wants to appropriate everything and use it against us? And how do we engage? Do we engage? Do we withdraw? Do we build? I know one of the things that we need to do is to rebuild our women's movement, because I think that is a source of potential strength. But I really am wondering, and would love to throw that out for discussion afterwards. But I'm turning over now to Angela.